Welcome to the Kawartha Small Business Podcast, where we believe the Kawarthas can be the most thriving region in Canada for small businesses. I'm Brian Rump from Profit Coach.
And I'm Matt Garrity of Matagy Digital.
And today we have with us Janice from the Big Brothers Big Sisters in Kawartha Lakes. And it is Big Brothers Big Sisters Month in September. Welcome. Tell us a bit about yourself and about Big Brothers Big Sisters.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here. So I'm Janice. I'm the executive director. I started in November of 2019 with the plan of just taking Big Brothers Big Sisters and following that plan that we had for the year before. And then March of 2020, that all changed and we had to find a new way. So I say that I've been there for 3 years, but really it feels like 3 months. Oh, yeah. COVID really delayed us.
Yeah, it feels like we've all been through a weird time warp. And the last few years are just a weird compressed time. And now we're all, you know, out trying to reinvent businesses and organizations. And it feels like every organization is in that sort of reinvention mode.
Yeah, and it's a real struggle, especially when people don't really understand what Big Brothers Big Sisters is all about and what we do. We are a mentoring organization. So we take children and youth that are in the community that have adverse childhood experiences, not always necessarily from a single parent family. Sometimes there are two parents in the family, but there are still a lot of struggles within that family. And we match them with caring adults in the community and help them provide that mentoring relationship. We believe that every child deserves to have at least one adult that lights up when they come in the room and really values them. But that's only a small part of what we do. We offer wraparound services for all of our families. So being able to provide referrals to other agencies, helping them out if they have parenting questions, letting them know where we can help with the school system as well. And then we provide group programming during our summer and during our school years. And then we have a whole bunch of programs that we run for the kids that are on our wait list. So on average, it takes 18 months to find a mentor for a child or youth in our community. Oh, right. Wow. Now. We have 25 kids on our wait list, and the majority of those are boys.
Wow. So what do you look for with mentors?
We look for a caring adult that has time. So if you're looking for a traditional mentoring, that's 3 to 4 hours a week that you're going to spend with a child. And we try to match you with someone who has those same interests. So if you're an outdoors person and you like to go hiking and fishing and biking, we like to find a child that likes to do those same things, but doesn't have someone in their family to do that with them. So really, we're really open to the type of mentors, but we have a very strict screening process that we go through. So you have to have a police check, you have to do an interview with our staff, and you have to have 3 references just to make sure that you've got the qualities that we're looking for, the dedication, that time that you're going to stick with the program for. We ask for a minimum of a year. So that's for our traditional mentoring. Our ISM program is my favorite program. And it'll launch again in September, and that's 1 hour a week out of school. So you take your lunch hour, you go down to a school, you spend 1 hour developing a relationship with a child that's struggling. It doesn't have to be academic-based. You can play games, you could do crafts, you could cook for that 1 hour, and you're done, and it's just from September to June.
So I've got 2 little kids, and it's hard enough to find time sometimes to play with them all the time. What if I wanted to be a mentor, but bring my kids along, bring my wife? Can we do stuff like that?
We always start with the first 6 months being just you and the child, because we want you to develop that relationship with that child. That's what that child needs. They need that relationship, that dedication, that one person that lights up in their life. And then afterwards, you could include your family and having activities with them.
You're pulling my heartstrings already. Like when we spoke recently, and you're like, talked about a need for mentors and this, and I was like, I just wanted to shut down. Like, no, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear the details, because then I'm going to get sad and emotional. I'm like, sign me up for all the kids.
Yeah, it's tough, because when you think about, you know, the key development ages for children, like, it makes a huge difference. Like, it hurts when I hear, you know, 18-month waiting list, because it's that critical time in your life where you just, you know, you need that adult in your life who just has dedicated time for you that you can look up to, or, you know, just play basketball with or whatever that interest is.
Yeah, that's why we really work with our waitlist kids to be able to provide them programming. So tomorrow is a good example. We're taking a group of our older kids. So we typically service between 6 years and 16. So tomorrow the group is for our 13 to 16-year-olds, and we're taking them to Control VR at the mall, and then we're going to the beach. So they don't have mentors yet. They're all on the waitlist, but we're trying to provide programs with them, with our staff that can provide that mentoring within our staff piece.
How did the kids get into the program?
Different ways. So referrals from other agencies are a little wee piece of it. We'll use John Howard Society. They might have someone that they're working for and they think that this kid could do really well if they just have someone else in their life. So they'll give us a call, fill out an inquiry on our website. Most of ours come from the parents themselves. Families realize that they need help and that. And we're what I consider a soft landing agency. So we meet the families where they are. If you miss two appointments, that's okay. We'll work with you. Maybe we need to reset the time of day. Maybe we do it differently. Maybe we start with a telephone conversation instead of actually having you come into the office. Or maybe we meet in the community if that works better. And then we try to pull them in. So a lot of times we have kids that don't have any other services. That are referred to us by their families because they think it's a great thing. They realize that they need that extra help. And then we do the referrals to get them other help.
Is it the parents recognizing that maybe they're not doing enough? Or is it the parents recognizing, like, my kid's getting into trouble, or he doesn't have friends, or he needs discipline, or, like, what are the parents recognizing here?
I guess a little bit of both. Mm. Often they're recognizing that they need that additional person, that they're struggling just to get by themselves, and they don't have the energy at the end of the day to give to the child that they need. They want to. They really, really want to. But they recognize that extra person is there, especially if they're a single-parent family.
Yeah.
So sometimes we have dads calling that are a single-parent dad that want to have someone, especially when we hit those teenage years, want to have a big sister involved. Mm. With that, or sometimes it's a mom that's a single mom that's struggling to meet that energy of a young boy in our programs. It's really diverse.
Interesting.
On how they arrive at our door.
And you get a choice, like, as a mentor of who you're going to work with? Like, I'm obsessed with golf. If I found a kid that liked golf, I could go golfing with him all the time.
Yes. Yeah, you do, okay. Sort of. So Vanessa, our case manager, she is amazing at matching. So she'll learn all about you through that interview process. She also spends a lot of time with the family and the child and learns all about them. And then she has what we call a mental match before she's even done. And she'll say, oh, Matt really likes golf. And you know that this little has said that he wants to be outside. He likes golf, but he also likes cycling. And they'll just be a perfect match. So when we get to that point, a prospective mentor is given the bios of three children to look at. And we do their first name and a little bit about their interests. And then you have a chance to look at that, review that, decide what fits for your personality. And then you'll say, I think I'd really like to match with child B. And then we call child B's family and we describe you to that child and their family. And then we decide whether it's going to work or not.
You gotta bring each kid in for an interview with the mentor, then the mentor will not be able to say no to you. Random idea I'll throw out here that I just thought about though also is, like, what could we do here at Thrive? Like, could we bring kids in for take your kid to school day type of thing, or?
Sure, I think there's lots of things that we can do.
Okay.
I think about having a, just come and learn about mentoring and having a couple of our matches come here and talk about their experiences. That would be awesome to do and to learn about what mentoring is and what the different programs are.
Cool.
And how you can support them.
Okay.
Tell me more about mentoring. One of the things that I talk about when people, you know, I've done a lot of volunteering. I think when you think of someone who's a mentor, I think there's a lot of reasons to say, that's really great. I'd love to do it, but I'm not a fit for it. And a lot of the people who say that, it's completely not true. So, you know, tell us, you know, for people listening, like, how old does it matter? What are they into? You know, I think we understand the big things that we don't want them, but like, you know, just, yeah, tell me more about that. Cause really we want everyone to, you know, reject the idea of being a mentor.
A mentor sounds like a lot of work from a business perspective. It's like, okay, I got to invest a lot of time in this person. And every time I meet them, I got to bring value and teach them and coach them and like beyond and all that. So it sounds scary. It sounds like it's a lot of work. The word mentor.
It does. Matt, who is your mentor?
A guy named Tom Sinas.
And what did you do?
He was my boss. He was my manager, who somewhat just became a mentor through conversation and not spending a lot of time with him, but just working with him.
So who was your mentor?
Mine was someone, it was in Scouts. So I grew up in Scouts and, you know, the person that I would call my biggest mentor was a Scout leader.
And how much time did it take for that relationship to develop with those two people?
It took a while, I think. You know, I think about it as kind of a multi-year type of relationship, but it was one night a week and then the occasional camping trip.
Yeah, and I worked under him, and there was how many other people? 20 to 40 other people working, like, under him type of thing, and I worked there for, I want to say just over 2 years, but I don't think I even worked with them for the first 6 to 8 months. So maybe an hour a week, hour or two a week.
So really the commitment isn't as big as we think it is,
mm-hmm.
right? My mentor, I've had several mentors over mm-hmm. my lifetime, from a grade 3 teacher who kept me after class and helped me learn to read better, to other not-for-profit leaders that have taken me under their wing. And it hasn't been all that much time or effort because it's stuff that you're already doing or wanting mm-hmm. to do. When you're asked about the age of our mentor or what a mentor looks like, our youngest mentors are in their 20s. Our oldest is in his 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be all the way through. It depends on when you have the time. When is the time in your life that is best? I'm going to quote one of our mentors who said that the reason that he keeps mentoring, and he's had more than one little over the years, is that it connects him with his childhood. Where else can you go in your 70s and hang out with kids and ride roller coasters and do wonderful things and not have it look weird or feel weird?
Yeah.
Because you're giving back in that connection and that piece. And he just loves it for that reason. Mentors get as much as they give. And that's something that I think we have to remember. Mentoring can be part of your mental well-being.
Mm-hmm.
It can give you that energy. It can remind you of things that you used to do and that you want to do again. You can feel energized from it. So in 3 hours a week, what do you do for your mental health? Mentoring can be part of that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a good way to talk about it. I'm just thinking, I have a person I kind of randomly met and been working with. His name's Jungle Jim Hunter. And he was the first Canadian to win a medal in the Olympics for alpine skiing back in the 70s. And he spent his career mentoring kids to high performance and was saying, and he asks them all, and he does a lot of research and recording things, people who've done really well, but almost always it comes down to before the sort of age you're in grade 7, you have an adult say that they believe in you mm-hmm. for something. And just that simple act of, you know, for him, it was alpine skiing and, hey, you're really good at this, or you look like you have what it takes. And then he decided he was going to be, you know, the first Canadian to win a medal, which he did. And in his case, he was on the prairies and didn't have access to a mountain. So it's kind of an interesting story of how someone on the prairies with no access to a mountain within a few years becomes the third best in the world at a sport. But the just importance of that as kids. So, you know, as a mentor, you just need to be there.
yeah, and share those experiences. Some of our youngsters don't even realize that they could go to post-secondary education, that it would even be an opportunity for them, or they don't realize what the trades are all about, or what does it mean to fix a toilet, because they've never been exposed to that or had that opportunities. Mentoring doesn't mean going out and spending money and doing big trips like going to Wonderland. It means just spending time together, going shopping at the grocery store together, learning how to budget. All of those things are things that can be part of mentoring that are just part of our daily lives.
That's just so interesting, like, from a business perspective still. I keep going back to the idea of, like, take your kid to work day. But, like, I'm connected with plumbers and HVAC people and home builders. And, like, how do we get these kids into, like, all those experiences? Like,
yeah,
that's really cool to me. So
we have one person in our mentoring program right now that she wants to be in the trades.
Mm-hmm.
But helping her discover to the, cross those barriers, just being a female in the trades.
Yeah.
And that piece. But these kids don't realize what, don't have the opportunity. It's not that they don't realize, it's that they don't have the opportunity to see those jobs, to see what a business does, what's involved in running a business.
Yeah.
They don't understand that. They don't have that exposure, that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So even taking a little to work.
Mm-hmm.
So we have kids that are very fashion oriented.
Sure.
And maybe that's something that they would like to learn more about or be part of. And I will have to say that the majority of our teenage groups are always about making money.
Yeah.
Where am I going to get the money? How do I get the money? How do I get a job? And that can be part of mentoring, is teaching those skills, those business skills.
That's cool.
You kind of forget about all that just external perspective you need. And I think about, you know, I didn't grow up around here, but it was a small town. And I remember people telling me, oh, you're smart and good at math, you should be an engineer. I didn't know what an engineer was.
Someone who drives a train, right?
Until a really long time. And, you know, wasn't exposed to even like where my dad worked. You know, sometimes you would get to go and hang around there, but I didn't really. Like, my uncle owned a mechanic shop, so I kind of knew a little bit about what that was. But you just, your world is so small, you don't get the chance to just explore and see what all these things are.
Also the development of soft skills. So we talk a lot about, I'll say with my new staff, that they don't always have all the skills they need when they come in and start the jobs off. And we have several Canada Summer Job students that come in every summer. And we have to spend those first few weeks teaching some of those skills that we, it's almost like we expect our kids to learn through osmosis, that they're just going to learn these things. And we forget that sometimes we have to directly teach them. So teaching those things, like we were talking about earlier, answering the phone, teaching them how to answer the phone, that you pick it up and you actually have to say hello to the person that's on the other end. And those things that a mentor can teach is just so valuable going forward. We also have stats that tell us that people that have been through a mentoring relationship are 45%, have a 45% higher rate of finding jobs that support their families, not just getting by, but actually supporting their families, and a 63% higher chance of going to post-secondary if you've been in a mentoring relationship. Those are all pieces that mentoring provides. We break a cycle of poverty.
Wow. So tell me, this is a good bridge of, you know, small not-for-profit as a business. You know, there's a clear need. There's a clear benefit. But how do we let people know about it and sort of call them to action to become a mentor?
I like to know that myself.
Yeah.
as a small not-for-profit, marketing is a huge barrier for us. It's not a large budget line for us. So reaching out, doing podcasts like this is definitely a benefit for us. And we're just trying to get the word out ourselves. It's hard. Marketing is really hard for the small not-for-profits.
Yeah, what are some things you've tried?
We depend on social media. We really, really depend on social media. We've gotten away from print because it is expensive. That takes up, it's a whole bunch of our budget, where social media is virtually free. I mean, you boost your ads, you pay for some advertisement and that piece. Word of mouth, events are the other ways that we focus on for our marketing.
What type of events?
Oh, you're hitting Big Brother's Big Sister's month of September, and boy, do we have the list of events going on. Let me see if I can remember them on. So, do you remember Burger Day at Victoria Park?
Oh, yeah.
His eyes just lit up.
It was always I live in Finland, and then I used to work for Bank of Montreal, and when I transferred to Bank of Montreal, it was a big thing because it was something the Rotary Club did, and we had people who worked there who were in the Rotary Club, and I remember standing in line because it was the first day of school. It was, I think, like lunch or even dinner was like a burger thing, and it seems to have, I guess it's coming back.
It's coming back. September 5th, first day of school, always the first day of school. And you're right, the Rotary Club did used to run it. They've let it go. We're working with the Masons this year, and they've picked up that as a Big Brothers Big Sisters event. So it's going to be our launch to Big Brothers Big Sisters Month. So for $10, you can get a burger or a hamburger, a bag of chips, and a drink. And some socializing at the park and support amazing organizations. So Burger Bag Day is back. Tickets are available at our office or from Pat Dunn. If you see him around town anywhere, he's got tickets as well. So that's the first one that we've got going that week.
Can I just show up on Burger Day and then pay you there?
You sure can.
Okay.
Or you can purchase tickets ahead of time, or you can purchase tickets for your staff.
Right.
And make it a staff appreciation day. Which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I know some of our downtown banks are doing that.
Cool.
Really appreciate their support. Oh, I should have brought a list with me. So that is on the 5th. On the 9th, we're celebrating our matches with a canoe day. We're taking a canoe trip just up north of Peterborough there. So we have someone who's donated access to their camp, and we're going to go canoeing to celebrate our matches. On the 8th, we're doing a puck drop at the Muskies. One of our matches will drop the puck for their season opener here in town with our Muskies. On the 16th, we have a skate for mentoring. So from 3:45 to 5:45 on Pad 2 at the Lindsay Arena for a $5 donation to support Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Come out and skate with us. We're going to try and get some of our local police officers and EMS people to come out and skate with us that day. Unfortunately, the Muskies aren't available. They're in practice at the other rink, so you can go watch them practice, I guess, before you come over. Then we will be, the 18th is actual Big Brothers Big Sisters Day, and I'm going to be on the radio with Vanessa in the morning. And then we're going to be at the fair and have a booth at the fair, so you can come by and drop by. And we're going to have a photo booth to support Bowl for Kids' Sake, which is happening on October 1st. So you can put a team together and come out and support us by bowling, but drop by our fair booth and have your picture taken on our neon background. With our glow sticks and put your name in for a drawing and some prizes.
Awesome. Are you always that busy with events?
Sometimes it feels that way.
Yeah.
We tend to go from event to event. Events are mainly how we fund the office.
Mm.
We don't receive any substantial funding outside of, we receive less than 5% from our municipality and from the Ministry of Education. Every other dollar that comes into the agency is through donations and events. So that's the way we support and keep ourselves going. So yeah, sometimes we are that busy all the time. If it's not with activities for our kiddos, it's activities to keep those dollars moving. We'd like to move away from that a little bit and get some more monthly donors or major donors coming into the office so that we can concentrate more. Planning an event takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And a lot of energy. And we would like to take that energy and put it into the kids rather than to events all the time.
Events are wildly stressful. And like we do them here at Thrive, and they're stressful up until the day where that first person walks in and the stress goes away. But like there's always that underlying stress. And it's exciting stress, maybe, anxious stress, but it's a lot.
It is, and it's a lot of time put into them, and those are times that we could be doing events or programs for our kids on our wait list that are waiting for those mentors, or there are times that time could be dedicated to supporting the match and making sure it's going smoothly, providing support by offering activities or just having someone to talk about, hey, my little said this to me and I don't know how to handle that. and doing that piece. It's where we'd like to eventually move to.
Yeah, yeah. You have an email list, did you say? How big is it?
It's not very big.
It's over 100?
It's approaching 100.
That's good. That's where your goal line is going to be. So I'm going to repeat a story. I think I already told you off air a week ago. But when I was first approached by a foundation a couple of years ago, when I started managing digital, I was like, oh, this is really exciting. They're going to have so much money. I'm going to get rich. Which was not the case. I was like really nervous though, because I had worked with so many like B2B type businesses, whatever. I never worked with a nonprofit. I reached out to a friend that worked with me at another big agency who worked with SickKids. And he said, we can do every marketing tactic in the world. Nothing matters other than email marketing. Like pull on heartstrings and email marketing. Because at hospital, this was a hospital, but like hospitals are different because there's a bit more access to, okay, you've been at this hospital and we can pull on heartstrings, but we email those people and they come back. But donors will donate once and they often won't do it again unless you ask them. But if you just keep emailing those people, not like an Old Navy amount where you're getting an email from them every day and it's gross and it's a numbers game, but like once a month, remind them that you exist. Tell about your programs. It will be a gold mine. That might be an inappropriate word, but like that will be a big revenue generator for you, more than social media. So,
yeah, we're trying to get there. We're definitely trying to get there. The other piece that we're struggling with is that donor stewardship.
Yeah.
So, like you have return customers to your store,
yeah.
And how you do that in a retail piece. We're trying to figure out the best way to do that in our community.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that our donors want from us?
Mm.
So one of the things that we've just started this with our monthly donors, our small, dedicated, loyal people that we have as our monthly donors, we're providing them with like an additional 10% discount off of tickets. So if you were a monthly donor, we had $150 for our golf tournament,
yeah.
Was the tickets. You could get your tickets for the golf tournament at $130.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to do that, a little bit of that piece for our monthly donors, and to invite them to things like our Big and Little Picnic. Come out to our Big and Little Picnic. Meet our matches.
Yeah.
See what's happening,
yeah.
For that piece. We're working on that.
My
but
gut,
it's slow to come.
Yeah, my gut tells me that they... I'm not disagreeing with you, but like my gut tells me that they want pulling on heartstring stories. They want to see like, okay, my money went to help this little, and here's this email with this little's face looking up at you all happy, and your money went towards this little doing this, and look how happy it is. I'm never not paying. You know what I mean? I'm never canceling that monthly donation. And for other people to see that, they're like, okay, I don't want that smile to disappear. I don't know if I've not donated, but maybe I did. I did actually for the cult. Anyways, to me, like, I don't want access to something. I don't want a discount. I don't want freebies. I want that success story. And I want to see a happy little. And like that, I'm not trying to sell you on email, but like that just goes back to email to me. Every month, picture of a kid's face, boldly like, your money made him smile by doing this. Donate now. Donate again. Whatever. I think that's what they want.
But, you know, this always turns into like a marketing coaching session, which is good because I feel very strongly about not-for-profits. I have a personal donation strategy of kind of here's the monthly things that I do. I know what I care about, and often I think it comes down to just being asked. And also, depending what the amount is, you don't need anything extra. And I've worked with so many foundations, and they have the same sort of story. It's nobody understands what we do. We don't actually want to ask them for anything or make it easy. And then we're worried about if they get mad. And I think it comes from maybe you get that one donor who, you know, gives $50 once and then wants the world. But it's almost the volume game of making it easy, encouraging people to donate monthly. I've heard so many people complain. They're like, oh, no one wants to donate monthly, but then they've never actually put any work into asking people to do it. And then when they do it, they're all surprised that people, you know, want to donate monthly. And then, yeah, not like, I know there's a few things I donate to. And then if they offer me a discount, it's like, that's not why I'm here. Like, I don't want a discount on the golf. Like, I want to pay the price for the golf tournament. And then maybe I want to donate more at the golf tournament. Like, you know, if I can get on my soapbox even more, I think it would be great in the community to add more of a culture of donating to stuff, or like wanting to, you know, I know if I'm going to a fundraiser like that, like I'm going to donate something, and I guess not being afraid of that, but, you know, go out and like go after people and, you know, ask them clearly.
Yeah. For that. Our statistics that our national did, part of our accreditation, because we are an accredited agency, so part of our accreditation, national sends out surveys to your community to find out what the community views you and how that, and what ours came back was that 92% of people know about Big Brothers Big Sisters, but only 2% consider giving to us. And that's such a huge disconnect, and that's one of the struggles that we're having. Is how do we turn that knowledge into a donor?
Yeah, and I think it's asking. Like, I've tried not to give away too many secrets of information from people I've worked with in past and knowing financials, but a lot of times people just donate to what's in front of them. Very few people will actively go look, so they'll know about it, but maybe they've just never been given the opportunity, or they don't know that you need money, or they don't know what that's for. But, you know, children as a cause, you know, I think there's a few options, and you probably just want people to, you know, pick one of those options and donate, and then more often than not you'll be one of those.
Yeah, and the brand identity, I think, is something that we as an agency really need to work on. That we've changed our logo in 2019 and we're no longer purple, and getting that piece out that this is us now. This is who we are. We are newer. We are refreshed. We have a different approach to the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the awareness of like, no one's going to donate if they don't know who you are or what you do or why you need it, or they don't just get that general impression of it. But I think the name Big Brothers Big Sisters is like, it's one of those foundational ones where a lot of people get what that is. And I think it's even confusing because there's lots of other entities that run similar type things, but it's not the same brand. And it's just that repetition of letting more and more people know about it and making it really easy to take their money. I find that I think talking about this before, a lot of places make it really hard for you to donate to them. And that's, as someone who does give, it's really frustrating for me because, like, if you catch me at the right time, like, you know, you should be carrying a square tapper around with you
everywhere I go
all the time versus like, oh, well, maybe hunt on down our website and write us a check and send it in the mail. Like, it just turns, you know, people away.
Yeah. We use Canada Helps and Zephy. Zephy is great because there's no fees back to the agency, where Canada Helps takes a portion off the top of the donation. Zephy doesn't.
Oh, okay.
So 100% comes to the agency. So that's a great way of doing it. We do have a square.
Oh, that's good.
We have it wherever every event. I don't have it with me today, but every event that we have with us as well.
Yeah, I do like, I personally, I like Canada Helps as a user because I can go in and readjust and change the organizations or the amounts fairly easily, and then you get one tax receipt versus a million different ones in the mail. So,
and it's great from an agency point of view because writing out those tax receipts is time consuming.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot of effort, and knowing all the rules and the pieces about it. So what do you get if you're a sponsor versus what do you get if you're a participant versus what do you get if you're a monthly donor?
Yeah.
Having to keep all that knowledge going. So Canada Helps is great with supporting all of that as well.
And there's always a cost to accept money. This is my also passive aggressive pitch to other small businesses. I see people you know, it's better now that people would, you know, not want to accept Square because they're like, well, I don't want to pay a fee. And it's like, well, you're missing out on donations without it. Or, you know, when I worked at the bank, you know, there's a fee to put cash in the bank, which a lot of people don't know about, or they get surprised when they've never been in business and then they show up with a big deposit and there's a big fee to accept that. That's just one of those sort of costs that get built in.
Yeah, definitely. I think that having an agency that runs 95% on community donations, we've got a lot of work to do with our community, a lot of relationship building, but we're trying. We're working through it.
Just keep out there and ask them and ask for the money.
Yeah, and give back with all those, the differences we're making in the kids' lives.
Yeah.
I finish off with one mentoring story?
Yes,
of course,
please. Yes.
Right, so we just had our big and little picnic on the weekend. We had a match there that had only been together for four months. They're just coming up on their four-month anniversary. And the mentor works locally, and he made a comment that his little had left a note on the windshield of his car recently. So the little was downtown, recognized his mentor's car, and put a, hey, I miss you, big bro, on his windshield. And he took that into work, and everybody was saying, we didn't know you had a little brother. So he was explaining that it's not his real little brother, that it's his little mentoring. And when Luke was sharing that story with me, his face was just so bright. It was this big smile about how important it made him feel as a mentor to make a difference in the life of Andrew. And that piece. That was my good story of the
week. That's awesome.
Yeah. So tell us, where do people find you? How do they become a mentor?
Well, you can find us on our website or through our social media. We're also right here on Kent Street. So we're right over where the hidden gem above the lingerie loft and the country kitchen up that nice big staircase. You can give us a call at 705-324-6800. And we're always downtown.
Awesome. What's the website?
I'm looking at it now. I'm going to stall for them. It's bigbrothersbigsisters.ca, but that's all of Canada.
It's corthalakes.bigbrothersbigsisters.ca.
Awesome. So that's how they find you. We'll wrap up now. If you want to be on the podcast, do what Janice did and reach out to us at setitup@corthasmallbusinesspodcast.ca.